If you will, open your Bibles or turn on your device to Joshua chapter 3. This will serve as our text this evening, Joshua chapter 3. I want to read verse 1 from the NIV version. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. Now, this crossing over the Jordan River would be a momentous occasion for the Israelites, as that would be the body of water that they would cross over into the promised land, the land that had been promised to them for generations. It would be new territory for them. As you will recall, the period after the crossing of the Jordan would become known as the conquest. There were people in that land that they were to drive out. And so it was in verse 4 it says, Joshua says to them, "You have not passed this way before." This would be a new experience for them. And it must have seemed like an extremely challenging experience to the Israelites. I say this because normally the Jordan River was only 30 or 40 yards wide and maybe 6 foot deep. But at the time they're going to cross the river into the promised land, the Jordan, it was at flood stage. That is alluded to in verse 15 of our text. And historians tell us that at this time, during the harvest time, during the flood season, that the Jordan River could be a mile across. And the waters coming down from Mount Hermon and other tributaries would cause the waters to be rough. And so here they are about to be told to cross over this Jordan, and they have 3 days to think about how it's going to be done. That's how long they camp out in this position. And it's also helpful to remember that there's a bunch of people among the Israelites, from 2.5 to 3 million people. Now imagine that many people crossing this Jordan River at flood stage. And they're sitting there wondering how it's going to be done. Before we get into the text further, I want to make an application. I wonder, do we have our own Jordans to cross? And what I mean by this is some life-changing decisions. Some places in our lives when, well, we haven't been this way before. We haven't had to make this kind of decision. And so we feel that anxiety about this new experience. Or it may be some challenge as the people of Israel had their challenges and are about to have more. We also face our Jordans. It may be trials, difficulties, things we can't go around. We just have to go through. Pardon me. And because we do, this is the approach I'd like for us to keep in mind as we study this text tonight. What can we learn from the Israelites as they're about to cross over the Jordan? What can we learn from their experience, particularly God's instructions to them, that may help us when we're crossing our own Jordans? Let's get into the text some more. Look with me to verse 2. "So it was after 3 days that the officers went through the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, 'When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it.'" Now, the Ark of the Covenant was a key piece of furniture to the Israelites. Here's an artist's rendering of the Ark. A rectangular box with the cherubim facing each other on the top. That plate, the lid of the was called the mercy seat, the top of the Ark of the Covenant. Inside the Ark of the Covenant were some artifacts that were especially meaningful to the people of Israel. A pot of unspoiled manna, Aaron's walking stick, the precious stone tablets that had felt the engraving finger of God. But this Ark of the Covenant was the central symbol of God's presence with the people of Israel. And so now they're told, when you see the Ark of the Covenant, that which symbolizes God's presence among us, then you break camp and you go after it. And it was designed for mobility. You see the poles that were affixed to it. And it was to be carried by priestly or Levitical personnel who were the only ones allowed to carry it. No one was allowed to touch the ark. So notice again the instructions. When you see the ark of the Lord, your God, and the priests, the Levites bearing it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. But isn't God saying to the people of Israel, when he says follow the ark, isn't he essentially saying, follow me? Follow me. And that's a lesson we need to remember when we're facing our Jordans. Lesson number one, follow God. Follow God. Obey his will. No matter how difficult it gets, no matter what advice we may get from other people, be determined, I'm going to do the will of God. I'm going to do what he's instructed me to do. No matter if it's easier to do something else, follow God. Follow his instructions. Follow his word. The instructions continue. Verse 4. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way before. So keep some distance from the ark. About 2,000 cubits. The cubit was about 18 inches or a foot and a half. So if you do the math, 2,000 cubits would be about 3,000 feet. Or as even the NIV translates it, 1,000 yards or 1,000 football fields. They were to keep the distance. Why do you suppose they were given those instructions? Davis and Whitcomb, two authors, suggest three possible reasons. Number one, a desire that all the people might be able to see the ark. And that makes sense with that many people. If they were to hover around close to the ark, then the others couldn't see it. A second reason is to understand that it was God who was leading them into the land and not a great military force. Again, that ark symbolized God's very presence. And so perhaps the lesson is being underscored. It is God who's leading you. But then a third thing may just be that it was a reminder of the sacredness of the ark and the holiness of God. Keep your distance. Here's a lesson I'd like for us to consider, and that is to revere God. Revere God. He is God, we are not. And our place before God is always one of submission, never arrogance. Yes, we should lovingly submit to Him because of His great love and mercy for us, but let's also recognize His holiness, His majesty. I wonder if we get too casual about our relationship with God. If we take it for granted. If we take Him for granted and don't give Him the deep respect, the reverence that He deserves. So perhaps in these instructions, there's also that reminder that ark is holy because it represents the presence of God. And so we need to stay away and follow God's lead. I think this is also reflected in the additional instructions we find in verse 5. Joshua said to the people, sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Sanctify yourselves, consecrate yourselves. What did it mean to them? To the Hebrews, this would consist in washing their garments, their clothes, and their bodies, as well as abstaining from any act or object regarded as unclean. They were to consecrate, sanctify themselves because God was going to do something amazing among them. They were commanded to set themselves apart for God's program, for His will. That's a great lesson for us. that we must sanctify ourselves, set ourselves apart to do God's will and not our own. Notice that Joshua gives some instructions to the priests. Verse 6. Then Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over before the people." So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. And the Lord said to Joshua, "This day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you." So one lesson that the people of Israel are to learn from this experience is that Joshua is their leader. And just as God was with Moses, so God would be with Joshua. This was to be a lesson underscored in this experience. Verse 8, "You shall command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, 'When you come to the edge of the water of the Jordan, you shall stand in the Jordan.'" I can't help but wonder what's going on in their minds. These carrying the ark are told to go stand in the middle of the Jordan. Again, its banks are overflown. It's overflowed, and it's probably turbulent water, and they're told to go stand in the Jordan. If they were good on their history, they could recall that just a few years before, the previous generation, you remember Moses held up his rod, and by the power of God, the waters of the Red Sea parted, and they walked through on dry ground. I don't know if this is in their minds or not. If not, then they're probably thinking to themselves, what good is that going to do? But perhaps they're also anticipating something. As they've been told to sanctify themselves because the Lord is going to do something wonderful among them, perhaps they're anticipating something incredibly special here. So the priests follow Joshua's instructions. And Joshua has further instructions for the people. Verse 9. "Joshua said to the children of Israel, 'Come here and hear the words of the Lord your God.'" They've been told they're about to see something incredible. But he wants them to listen. Listen to what God wants you to learn from this experience. And here's what they're to learn. Verse 10. "Joshua said, 'By this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of all the earth is crossing over before you into the Jordan.'" Two lessons they were to learn. Number one, that God is with you. You shall know that the living God is among you. And keep in mind what they're about to be told to do as in the conquest of the land of Canaan and going against enemies. And this would be a reminder that he wants them to never ever forget. We'll see that underscored. Remember this experience. This is proof positive that the living God is among you. And number two, that he will lead you to victory. Deuteronomy chapter 7 speaks of these seven nations. And in Deuteronomy, they're described as greater nations than you, speaking of the people of Israel. Meaning more powerful, perhaps more numerous. But God is underscoring to them, "I will give you the victory." Here's a point of application. As we face our Jordans, that we need to trust God. We need to trust God. That he is with us. That he will lead us to ultimate victory. That means that whatever we face, it's not going to defeat us ultimately. That doesn't mean that everything that we face is going to be easy. But it will mean that we will gain the ultimate victory through him. In verse 12, this is why we say that God would never want them to forget what's about to happen, because of these instructions that he gives them. Now, therefore, take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man from every tribe. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, the waters that come down from upstream, and they shall stand as a heap. In Joshua chapter 4, we'll see that Joshua instructs these 12 men, one man from every tribe, to take these stones and set them up as a pillar, as a memorial of this miraculous crossing. And it was set up as a monument to cause the people of Israel to reflect on this event. Again, to remind them of those profound lessons. The living God is among you, and he will lead you to victory. And he's telling them, remember what's about to happen. Don't ever forget it. Remember it for generations to come. When you face difficulties in the future, when you face enemies, when you face trials, I'm going to help you now, and I will help you then. Lesson for us: let's always remember what God has done for us, because we're prone to forget. We are prone to take the credit. We're also prone to be anxious when we face some new challenge ahead of us. We need to learn the lesson that Joshua is underscoring to the people of Israel. Remember what God has done for you in the past. Remember the good things, the blessings that he's given you. So we come to the final section of Joshua chapter 3, when it all takes place. Verse 14. So it was when the people set out from their camp to cross over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people. And as those who bore the Ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the Ark dipped in the edge of the water, for the Jordan overflows all its banks during the whole time of harvest. Now let me pause there. Trying to put myself into this setting and imagining myself one of the Levites carrying the Ark. And you come to the edge of this river that's overflowed its banks, perhaps turbulent and murky. And I can just envision them stepping slowly into the water. Because when it's murky like that, you can't see how far you might step into the water, how deep it may be. But as soon as they dip their toes, their feet into the water, it stops upriver. I found this very interesting, verse 16. The waters which came down from upstream stood still and rose in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zaratan. So the waters that went down into the sea of the Arabah, the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people crossed over opposite Jericho. I don't know about you, but I have often imagined, seen pictures such as this next one, that the waters just stood up as a heap to the north of the priests carrying the ark. And they would see this wall. But that's not what the text says here. That God caused the water to rise up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zaratan. Historians and those who would make these Bible maps have tried to figure out where this is. And I found this map that shows Shittim there just north of the Salt Sea, northeast. And you see Jericho to the west, southwest. And so it would be in that general vicinity near the river where they would encamp those 3 days, and thus where they would actually cross. But you see, Adam is north of that area. And by that map scale, it's 15 to 20 miles. And some Historians suggest it may have even been as far as 30 miles north of that area. And what's the significance of that? Well, there wasn't a wall standing beside them. God had stopped the water way far north of them, miles north of them. What's the significance? Sometimes I'm a very practically minded person. And here's my practical mind at work. That many miles north, that gives plenty of room for 2.5 to 3 million people to cross over on dry ground. Does it not? Now imagine all of those people crossing the Jordan on dry ground, no mud on their sandals. In verse 17, the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. And all Israel crossed over on dry ground until all the people had crossed completely over the Jordan. And imagine being one of those Israelites as they stood on the western banks of the Jordan. Don't you believe they're standing in awe of God and His power? And as they look ahead, as they've never passed that way before, but as they look into Canaan now, knowing that there's other people there that they're going to be going up against, don't you know they're confident? If God can do this, watch out, Jericho, here we come. Here's a final lesson I would suggest, and that is to give God the glory. The story here is really not about the Israelites. It's about God. Our story is really not about us. It's about God. It's about what God wants to do for us if we'll only submit our lives to Him. Our victories, and especially our ultimate victory over sin and death, are because of what God has done for us. Fannie J. Crosby wrote thousands of hymns, many of which we sing. There's one that I read just recently that she said was one of her favorite. It's entitled Saved by Grace. The first verse says, "Someday the silver cord will break, and I no more as now shall sing. But oh, the joy when I shall wake within the palace of the King." She's speaking of the time when she would die. And that song has this refrain: "And I shall see Him face to face and tell the story saved by grace." There's two things that really strike me about that refrain. Number one, I shall see Him face to face. Fannie J. Crosby became blind not long after she was born. The pictures that I've seen of her, she's wearing these real dark glasses. She had never seen. And so her reference to "I shall see Him face to face" reveals her longing there. But the second thing is, I shall see Him face to face and tell the story. And the story is how I was saved by grace. And the story is really all about God. How He saves us by His grace. Yes, as we look back into this story, we see that yes, it was all about God. But they had to be willing to submit to His instructions. The priests carrying the ark had to be willing to take those initial steps and even step into that turbulent, murky, broad water, body of water. In other words, it took a step of faith for them. But isn't that the way with us? We must step out in faith in order to obey God. We got to step out in obedience, trusting what He has said. What kind of river do you face today? Is there some some challenge that lay ahead of you, some difficult decision. Perhaps you can relate to the Israelites as they are encamped next to the Jordan, about to be told to cross over. May we learn what they learn, to trust God and know that now, through God's providence, He will see us through. But it takes trusting Him to be willing to do what He has instructed us to do. And perhaps there are some tonight that are ready to do just that. Take those initial steps of faith as you obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, or that you may desire the prayers of the church on your behalf. If that be the case, I want you to let that be known as together we stand and sing.